So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Can barely hear Ed. He's way out there, folks. I don't know if he can hear me, but it sounds like he's calling from way beneath the jail downtown.
Okay, you should hear me fine now.
There he is. There's Ed. He got out of jail. All right.
It's totally amazing what the heck goes on in this daggone place with equipment. There's an equipment malfunction somewhere. I just swapped out microphones, headsets, everything, and voila, we're back.
You know, it only happens at 7 o'clock Eastern, eh?
You know, it really does, because I've been using this all day through Skype. I mean, I Skype constantly. I'm always on the line with somebody around the country because they're always calling me to talk about national stories I've done and stuff. So yep. I'm on Skype all day long. Why this only happens during this show is totally beyond me.
I was gonna open up and say I'm glad you're not underneath the jail, because I don't know if they'll let you Skype there. And damn it, it sounded like you were Skyping under the jail for a moment.
Well, you know, it's really strange. I don't get it, but I guess I'm not supposed to. Anyway, folks, welcome to the Ed Springs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. We have got a lot to talk about tonight. Dale, I know there's a couple of things you would love to talk about. And before we go there, I want to make sure I don't forget to mention this, that Dale will not be here tomorrow night. I will be covering for him. I would normally announce that at the end of the show, but, you know, if you guys want to chime in and beat him to death tonight while he's here, feel free to.
Bring it on. Bring it on, bitch.
There we go. Unfortunately, Dale, nothing happened in the world today, so we really don't have anything to talk about.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you later then.
All right, man. Thanks. Nice seeing you. We all know that's a lie. Something always happens at this daggone place. Right here in Kentucky, though, one of the biggest stories going on, and I really want to get your opinion on this one, because this is something interesting to me, and I'll tell you why in a second. But Richie Farmer, as we mentioned last night, has been charged with 42 ethics violations. He was charged on Monday with 42 ethics violations. That's the highest number ever charged against anybody through the Ethics Commission. He faces a potential fine of $210,000 because he could be fined $5,000 for each offense. And if he's found guilty of all 42, and, you know, if he is found guilty, will they go for criminal charges? I kind of want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, I heard you and Mr. Martin talking about it a little bit, and I tend to agree with, I think, Mr. Martin, maybe it was you that said that Richie isn't one of those gangster types. He's just not that bright. I mean, he played basketball at UK. I rest my point. But, I mean, I saw a story today coming out of the Communist Journal that even his sister is in trouble now. Did you read this?
Well, see, that's kind of what I was hoping you would go to, and I'll tell you why.
His sister has been put on paid leave from the Kentucky Registry of Election Finance over ethics charges that are seen as serious.
Well, you know, that's the thing, because here's my problem. And, yeah, you know, it's pretty weird that anybody would have a problem. For one thing, Richie Farmer has got 42 ethics violations. He would not be facing this much scrutiny at all if he was Democrat in this state. We know this. We know this. Now, that is not to let Richie Farmer off the hook. Richie Farmer deserves whatever he gets for what he did.
Yep.
If he's guilty of 42 charges, fry him. I don't care. He deserves what he got. But, you know, the interesting contrast here is his sister. Rhonda Monroe is his sister, and she's being charged with using or attempting to use her insider's knowledge to help Richie. Now, that right there is extremely tough for me.
Yep.
She is being investigated. Of course, everybody's being investigated by the Attorney General Jack Conway, and that's where my problem comes in. Can you guess why?
Attorney General Jack Conway.
Attorney General Jack Conway.
I call him Attorney General.
I don't. I heard it. But can you guess why that's such a problem for me?
Well, I guess I kind of cheated. I heard a little bit of you and Mr. Martin's show last night. You think it's only happening because he's a Republican, I guess.
No. I think ultimately it was going to happen anyway.
Oh, okay.
There's no way that...
a lot of stuff Democrats get away with, and Richie's not my kind of Republican, but I thought maybe that's where you were going, but go ahead.
Well, no, that's the thing. Richie is getting looked at a lot harder because he's a Republican.
Sure.
But there was no way after the whole report came out last year from the state auditor's office, after Jamie Comer had requested an audit, after all of this stuff came out last year, it was clearly obvious that Richie Farmer was going to have to be charged with a couple of ethics violations.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think there's any way around that. That's not really the thing. For me, the most interesting part of this story is his sister being charged as well. That she's under investigation as well for using or attempting to use her insider's knowledge to help Richie. And this is where I was kind of wanting to go last night, and we went a different direction with it. But the thing is, Jack Conway's brother, Matt Conway, was employed in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office as an attorney for Dave Stengel, who is nothing more than a Democrat political hack. He's worthless. Thank God he's gone. But you got him in a situation where he was in all kinds of drug problems, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
And his brother used insider knowledge to keep Matt from going through anything. Matt lost his job at the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, but he was never criminally charged. Matt was never criminally charged with anything. No ethics violations, none of that stuff. Dave Stengel did not follow typical protocol in the situation he was at with him, and it was all because his brother was Attorney General Jack Conway, who, lo and behold, got involved and made sure that nothing bad happened to his brother. But Jack Conway was never charged, was he?
No, I mean, Jack Conway, we got to remember the fact he ran for U.S. Senate. He got his ass kicked by Rand Paul, just like Charles Merwin Grayson did. And people look past the fact that financial contributors to Conway's campaign themselves and Conway tipped off Matt Conway to the fact that he was being investigated for trafficking drugs and admitted obstruction of justice. And the Courier-Journal, which we know loved Jack Conway over Rand Paul, hit a bombshell story about this until after the election.
Well, and that's the big thing for me, because I don't like the double standard here. I don't have any problem whatsoever with Richie Farmer being charged. I don't care what his political affiliation is. I don't have a problem with his sister being charged. I don't care what her political affiliation is. But I do have a problem with the double standard. I don't like the double standard fact that Jack Conway, the Attorney General of Kentucky, uses insider information to protect his brother on drug charges. And, you know, here Richie Farmer is, his sister is in deep water for trying to let him know what they were doing. You know what I mean? It's that double standard that drives me nuts. Let's go straight to the phones, Dale. Hang on 1 second. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm listening to y'all always talking about people being double. Won't you guys get a life and stop trying?
That guy's gone already. I'm not even going to listen to you anymore. Your phone number is now recorded. You won't be calling into this show from this number again. I really get sick and tired of this whole crap. This is an ultra-left liberal who keeps calling into the show.
Yeah.
He's going to try to turn it into Obama. We're not going to go there. So we're going to sit here. We're going to sit here and stay with where we're at. So Richie Farmer.
The caller and Obama, you both can suck it. How about that, caller?
Well, there you go.
Come back on the air, caller. Prepare for a mouthful. I'll give you a lot to suck on.
Well, yeah, I appreciate the calls, but let's try to stick to
topic. Is he like a call bomber who comes by and starts just trying to manipulate everything for Obama? Is that the guy I heard the other night?
Well, whatever. I mean, I the problem is I like the calls. I really do. And I don't mind anybody calling.
I didn't know what he was going to say. I mean, I heard him say
He's called twice this week.
He's
back to Obama. He's an ultra-left liberal. It's all everybody else's fault, and that's okay, but we're not going to play that game.
You can make as many phone calls as you want when you have the ankle bracelet on for the house arrest, right?
Oh, that was bad. I wasn't going to go there. But here we go. So let's get back to basics here.
All right, so we were talking about the Attorney General, Jack Conway, and Mr.
Exactly.
DUI drug dealer, Matt Conway. Go ahead.
And his brother gets away with everything because of who he is, because Jack Conway is the Attorney General. Now, should Richie Farmer and his sister be held accountable? Yes.
Yeah.
But how can you logically sit here and have the state Attorney General hold Richie Farmer's sister accountable for some of the same behavior that he exhibited in the case of Matt? And that's my problem. That's what I have the problem with.
Well, I mean, it should be. I mean, you've been going after these Democrats for a long time, and sometimes...
Well, I go after Republicans, too, but go ahead.
No, I know, but I say Democrats because that's who runs this county. I mean, if you go back in that whole fiasco with Matt Conway, if you remember Mike O'Connell, you know this guy, Jefferson County Attorney, Mike O'Connell, he decided not to prosecute Matt Conway. And then, of course, O'Connell was also a financial supporter of Jack Conway. And then you had Dave Stengel, your good buddy Dave Stengel. He dismissed the drug trafficking allegations without any investigation at all, into that. And guess what? Stengel was also a financial contributor to Jack Conway's campaign.
Yes, he was. And Stengel
so
also...
You want people who donate to them also overlooking these allegations? I mean, that seems like a little bit of a conflict to me.
Well, for me, it was Jim King part two, because Dave Stengel is real close friends with Jim King, and that's why the Commonwealth Attorney's Office didn't do anything against Jim King, even though they had the evidence to do so. And when I tried to go to the grand jury myself, they blocked me. Now, according to the law, I can present the case to the grand jury myself. I didn't have to have Dave Stengel's permission to do so, but they refused to allow me access to the grand jury. So, actually, they violated law, in my opinion, but, that's okay. But that's the whole thing, because that's what I'm trying to point out here, is these relationships that these guys have, and it doesn't matter whether they're Democrat or Republican. Republicans do the same thing. But, that's the uniform.
Well, remember, there was another name. If you want to bring back one of your favorite cast of characters, we haven't mentioned this guy's name in a while. Remember, there also was a... somewhat involvement in the investigation of one Mr. Robert White.
Yes, yes.
And Mr. Robert White, is he?
Yes,
sir. Have they run
ran
him out of Denver?
Denver?
Have they run him out of Denver on a rail yet?
No, but they're going to before too long. I can promise you that. No, and as a matter of fact, I was on Denver radio a couple of times as a guest of theirs because of all the extensive stories that we did on Robert White over there.
They love
that. Yeah. So, that's the whole situation. It's the double standard that drives me nuts. In the meantime, we've got 8 people. Most are on paid time off, paid leave rather than unpaid leave. So they're getting paid by the state now to sit around and wait for this to go forward and see what happens. And that's another problem I've got. If you've got knowledge that these charges are true, why are they getting paid? Why are they getting paid?
I don't know.
Why should anybody get paid on the government dime, on our taxpayer money, to not work when they've committed an illegal act? That's a major problem for me as well. So this Richie Farmer thing is going to go pretty far pretty quick. I do want to get your take on another story, and then I'm going to get into a couple of stupid things here shortly. But
right.
Rand Paul.
Yep.
AP put out a story that said Rand Paul was offering citizenship to illegal immigrants. Rand Paul apparently took offense to that, went out on the road yesterday trying to tell them how wrong they were, that he wasn't offering citizenship. That he was just basically telling the whole world, we're not going to deport the people that are already here, but we're going to give them a chance to come out of the shadows and be legal taxpaying members of society. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've said all along that I'm kind of in the middle on the immigration thing because I don't blame people for when they come to this country. They're coming from, like, South American and Central American countries, and especially Mexico. But the funny thing is recently we've seen the immigration problem has actually gone down. I think that's partly because they see our country isn't worth crap either, so they don't want to come over here and work. I guess we should be insulted, but they see that even the jobs that they would do aren't there anymore. So I've always said, if they're going to come over here and be productive, that's fine, just don't give them any benefits. I mean, I walk that line between that because I'm not somebody who thinks that we can put them all on a big bus and take them all back because they didn't come over here all at once, so you can't take them back all at once. But I also think that if you want to punish something about immigration, go after these businesses that have all the illegal immigrants working under the table if you truly don't like what they're doing. But if they can come over here and be contributing factors to the economy and be a betterment to themselves and their families and us, then it doesn't bother me. But again, don't give them any benefits at all. Take all the benefits away.
Well, for me personally, I used to be of the mindset, take all the illegals, round them up, put them in the back of C-130 aircraft, cargo aircraft here in the U.S. Air Force, put them in the back of C-130 aircraft and put parachutes on and just start throwing them out the daggone back door, right over Mexico. Let them deal with their own problem. And I know that sounded pretty radical back then. It was kind of designed to force the discussion of what we really need to do with the illegal immigrants. So there's people going to be offended because I use that example today. But, you know, we are now having that discussion, though, and that's exactly what we've been needing to get to. Does this mean that Rand Paul said that these guys are going to be citizens? No, he did not.
Yeah.
What he said was, let's come out of the shadows. All right, let's go ahead and give you worker visas or whatever you have to have. All right, but you're not going to get any benefits or anything else. That's part of the package. You know, you're going to earn that stuff. But you can get in line for citizenship, but you're going to start at the back of the line instead of the front of the line, which is exactly what they're trying to do with this amnesty program. And I don't really see a problem with that. You know, there are a lot of good, hardworking illegal immigrants here in the United States. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
You know, is it right for them to be here? No. But if we can't deport the problem, then we need to correct the problem. So you correct the problem by cutting off benefits, which is one of the attractive ways to bring illegal people here.
Right.
You quit spending all our money trying to do this English as a second language crap in the classrooms. You
yep.
free up money for education. You do all these different things you should be doing. And then when you get through with starting that, then you say, okay, now you're going to live on your own. You're going to produce. You're going to make income. You're going to pay taxes. Here's your green card. You want to apply for citizenship? That's fine. But you can apply behind the 5 million that are already ahead of you.
Well, Rand,
if that's acceptable, fine.
Right, and Senator Rand Paul has increasingly tried and successfully, I think, because it's not that hard to look at the difference, separating himself from the old dinosaur GOP, and that puts him at odds with some of the elite members because a lot of them are thinking, oh, all these immigrants are going on welfare. And so Rand makes it clear he wants to emphasize hard work and mm-hmm. not welfare. And I don't know if I know you and I haven't talked on the air since this story came out, but when he gave his speech at CPAC last weekend, CPAC was just going on when I did last Thursday night's show, and Rand made it very clear. He said that he said in his speech at CPAC that he's never been a party person. He doesn't mm-hmm. think it's as important whether we are Republicans or Democrats. He'd rather be for people who believe in something. And I said this out on the social networks. I was just amazed that in March 2013, Rand Paul speaks the truth about the uselessness of political parties. On this show, we've called him Uniparty for a long time.
Yep.
And when he does this, the local and state Republican Party, the Steve Robertsons and the John McCarthys and the big Shelley Mays of the world, they are gushing over him and pretending like they backed him all along. But if you go back 1 year ago, we the people were saying the same thing in the conventions, and the same cronies like the Mays and the McCarthys acted like we were aliens and not welcome in their private country club. And Rand's saying the same thing now that we were saying a year ago. So it's amazing when your U.S. senator says it and they want to jump on that bandwagon, what they'll accept, huh?
Oh, it's totally amazing. Mayo, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. Listening and enjoying the conversation. Just what gets me, I mean, the first part is illegal. If I took a tent and went and camped on Bashir's lawn, you're going to say I wouldn't be, you know, rushed off to jail by state police, National Guard, or somebody. Other thing, I believe
it was the Occupy movement, right?
Yeah.
Look how well that works.
I mean,
Well, that did work, though, Dale. I mean, quite frankly, maybe I understand your point, and I'm totally with you, but the Occupy movement did work. We gave them the public parks as long as they stayed off of private lawns.
Yeah, they,
so
it worked because they were on public land. They had friends within the public buildings that were helping them get these rights to sit out there, whereas when the Tea Party movement, and I don't want to kind of pit those two juxtaposing against each other, but when the Tea Party movement wanted to have a big rally in the park, it took forever just to get the license. Like, you need a license for free speech. If you need a license, it's not free speech at all, is it? And then the Occupy movement, I try to defend them, but as Mr. Martin and I both said, they just kept tripping over themselves. They just kept looking like dumbasses. They never put anything out there worth contributing.
Well, the thing is on the parks, the public land, it's like, you know, the park is closed at 9. How did they get a free pass to camp out there and break the law and everything else? That's what I'm saying. You know, it shouldn't matter your class, different things. If you're going to protest and you're going to say we're going to occupy the park, then fine, arrest everybody. Do a sit-in, arrest, whatever, you know, like.
Mayo, realistically, I mean, do we allow the homeless population that same alternative? Do we allow the homeless population to sleep on park benches out in public view? No, we don't.
Yep.
So what made the occupiers any better than that? I totally agree with your assessment of that. And, you know, but that is really what it comes down to. There's always two sets of rules for whatever they want to make relevant. And when I say they, I talk about the Uniparty, because the occupiers were able to go into parks and take over the parks, and the police let them do it, the government let them do it, until, of course, they started having all the major crime. You had reports of rapes, murders, you know, open defecation on the public park lawn by human beings, not dogs. You know, they were just destroying it. So they ultimately had to shut them down, because these guys, there was nobody in the Occupy movement, in my opinion, that was actually really sincere about their efforts. I think at the very beginning, it's like everything else, I think at the very beginning, the sincerity is there. But, I mean, let's look at the Tea Party, for example. The Tea Party, in the beginning, the sincerity was there, but then they started doing all these factions. They started getting everybody there that really didn't want to do anything but cause trouble, and it co-opted and disrupted the movement, so you couldn't really stick with the fundamental reason why you were there in the first place.
Well, I think the name the Tea Party had has come back around full circle, because the new Tea Party movement, to use that name, came from a fundraiser that Dr. Ron Paul had when he was running for president in 2008, and this goes back to 2007, and he used the title in his fundraisers for this fundraiser they had out where he is down in Houston, Texas area, and it was called the New Tea Party Movement was the title of it, and that kind of caught on. But then all of a sudden that got hijacked, and you started hearing people, the Glenn Becks and the Sean Hannitys, all of a sudden thought they were Tea Party, but now I think it's kind of the scales are balancing again, because we saw how Rand took his stand with the filibuster. We've seen right here in Louisville, we have a Liberty guy took over the old group that I used to chair years ago, the Young Republicans. So I think maybe that's why the Tea Party movement's name is staying out there. I know a lot of people said, we talked about on this show, the Tea Party movement was going to go away. And I kept saying it wasn't going to go away, because they're not getting what they're looking for in either of the two major parties.
But, you know, truthfully, though, Dale, and the Tea Party to me today is not what they started out to be, even coming full circle. I mean, what it really boils down to me is, and it's the Tea Party, the Occupiers, insert name here, whatever faction you want to consider yourself part of. The real problem is that none of these people, number one, work together. All of these people jump into something because they want to act like they're different. It's like, for me, it reminds me of the old the grunge crowd. You know what I mean? You had kids that would go to school all dressed in black, and they would only run around with each other. They walked around in packs and groups, and they said they did that because they were individuals, that they weren't going to be part of any kind of a clique.
Oh, I know. Even the
counterculture
has
their
own culture. The counterculture has their own culture. The Tea Party movement is not easily defined because there is no leader, and that's by design, because if you have a group that has a leader, guess what? It's really easy for the government to go after that leader, and they can choose to either use them as an example or do something like we saw happen to the leaders in the 60s and kill them off. So then they become martyrs. But the movement, again, getting its name from the Boston Tea Party, referred to that Tea Party for inspiration, and again, they had an idea back, gosh, we're going on 4 years ago next month, to play on words. They came up with a contract from America rather than a contract for America, America. And a lot of stuff that they proposed 4 years ago are the same things that people like Rand Paul and Justin Amash and Thomas Massie are proposing now.
Well, we look at everything being proposed, but the reality is we're still a while away from getting where we want to go.
We don't have enough votes for it. Yeah, they need more. I mean, that's what Rand Paul kept telling people 2 years ago. People would ask Rand Paul, seriously, what can we do to help you? And in all candor, he would tell them, send more people up here like me.
Well, I remember that. You know, I actually was at quite a few events for Rand Paul at one time. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to have him on our show to announce his candidacy to the Louisville market. So, you know, I'm very familiar with that. You know, but it is interesting to me, though, because, you know, when you look at the Tea Party, who had every opportunity in the world and they squandered it. You look at Occupy Wall Street, the first week they were in existence, they had every opportunity in the world and they squandered it. You know, what is it going to take to get all these forces working together, you know, towards a common goal of changing the culture climate in Washington, D.C., or even right here in Louisville, Kentucky, Mayo?
Yeah, sorry about that. The point I was going back to, you know, the illegal, I believe it was Reagan that said, you know, a nation without borders isn't a nation. We failed that.
Mm-hmm.
Second part is a lot of these programs, I'm sure, I know Dale's listened to some of the shows because I've heard him call in like right after me or right before me. And these people are, you know, talking about, you know, benefits and subsidies and everything else. Well, you have people that are illegal that, you know, aren't paying a lot of them many times taxes or anything into the system, but yet they're still drawing on the resources.
Well,
and,
you know, there's a lot of people that think that that's a lot of people think that that's a misconception, though, Mayo, because if you look at the illegals who are using fake IDs, you know, they're still paying Social Security taxes, they're paying sales tax when they buy goods, they're paying local and state taxes, and they can't file for a refund because they're using an illegal ID. So a lot of people think that that's a misconception. Are they wrong?
Well, I don't think they're wrong, Ed, but what I would say about that is I would take a different spin on the tax argument. A lot of people get mad when they see somebody else not paying taxes because it's this whole, oh, I got taxed and so should you, and if it happened to me, it should happen to you, and that's that kind of envy and greed and selfishness that doesn't produce anything. I take the other extreme or the other side of it, if you will, and that is if they're not paying taxes, I say that's a good start. I think we need more of us not paying the taxes. You look at this crap where we talk about, oh, we have this sequester and we're going to have to cut things, and we see they never really cut anything in Washington. They just lower the increase of growth. It just means that next year, instead of going up 6%, it'll only go up 2%. So the fact is, I go back to what Alexander Haig said under Ronald Reagan, and Alexander Haig was out there looking at all the people protesting on Washington on the mall, and basically what he said was, let them keep protesting. We don't care as long as they pay their taxes.
Yeah, that's real interesting, but that does bring up a point here because, you know, just last week it was announced that the federal government has over $900 million in unclaimed tax refunds from last year alone. Over $900 million in unclaimed tax refunds. So where did that money come from? You kind of got to wonder if part of that isn't the illegal immigration that can't file taxes to get refunds, even though they are paying some kind of taxes. You know, it's an interesting paradox, and ultimately I think that that's why we need to come to the point where we go ahead and do what Rand Paul has described.
Well,
bring these people out of the shadows.
Yeah, if they're working here, they're going to pay some taxes. If they go into the store and buy anything with these
these aren't
stuff.
Sales taxes, though. These are income tax refunds. So these,
I know,
these
but
are
I'm saying, federal
income
stores,
tax.
And they buy anything with these nearly worthless Federal Reserve notes that we call dollars, they're going to pay sales tax. If they buy gas, they're going to pay gas tax. And some of them will find a way to register a vehicle and drive it, so they're going to pay those taxes. So, the income tax, again, we talked about this on my show. A few weeks ago, we had the 100th anniversary of the fake, phony, false amendment that gave us the income tax, and Kentucky never even ratified it. But they claim that Kentucky ratified it, and that's one of those things that I remember when the group called We the People was taking out ads, full ads in the old dinosaur media, $10,000, $12,000 ads, daring anybody to prove that you had to pay income taxes. They were offering $1 million if you could prove it. And it goes back to what I've always said, Ed. You and I and Mayo, we don't pay taxes because we think it's a good thing to do. We don't pay taxes because we think it's the right thing or the thing we have to do. We pay taxes because we're afraid not to.
Go ahead, Mayo.
Oh, well, like I said.
Am I right? Don't we pay taxes because
we're
afraid
not to? You're the little guy.
I'm not arguing with you.
If you're the little guy, you're going to jail. But if you're a big corporation or something like, you know, GE, one of your favorite things, you're not paying any taxes at all, which isn't right.
Exactly.
but that's what you know, what Ed had said. I mean, under Reagan, he thought it was, or he was told it was like 800,000. It ended up being 2 million. That Amnesty Act back then, when it was told under Bush, he thought it was like 2 million. It ended up being, I can't remember the gentleman's name. He was interviewed on 20, 60 minutes, and he goes, "No, they're misinformed. It's like 7 to 9 million back then. We're at supposedly, they say, 12 million now, but, you know, it's just like a lifeboat. You can only save so many people. We have programs, you know, where Medicaid, Medicare, welfare, food stamps, et cetera, but if you have more people, you can only put so many people in the boat before the boat's going to sink."
Well, there's right. no doubt. When you got, when you got
my problem is the people that haven't, like Ed said, you know, they haven't paid their federal income taxes. You know, yeah, they may have paid gas tax or grocery tax, et cetera, mm-hmm. but they have not paid into the system. So if they have not paid into the system, they don't deserve the benefits of it. Why? They didn't pay. Number two, they're not an American citizen. I mean,
well,
I used to believe, like Ed, you know, drop them all off in the C-130, kind of got a little mellower, you know. But, you know, the ones that are, you know, my poppy's from Puerto Rico, legally. Came here to the United States, everything. You know, I mean, there's people from Cuba that'll make a raft out of Clorox bottles and swim across, you know, to get here because, you know, the American dream. And those are the people, yes, we want. But, you know, the scare tactics of, like, what was it, Homeland Security releasing over 300 inmates.
Well, you bring up a good point, though, because the only thing that the TSA, the Homeland Security, and all the other crap does is it takes away liberty and freedom from Americans. It holds us accountable to a standard that they don't hold anybody else accountable to that's illegal. When you talk about the number of illegals in this country, you can easily double whatever they tell you, as we know from history. They're saying 12 million, so we're talking about 24 million in actuality. It's almost like the unemployment rate. They say it's 8%. It's really 16% because the government skews the numbers to favor themselves. So the real question is, though, the real question is, here we've got 24 million illegal immigrants. We're not going to put them on the back of C-130s with American-made parachute on their back and dump them out over top Tijuana. We know it's not going to happen. So what do we do? And I think what Rand Paul ultimately is doing here, and this is where a lot of people are, you know, the left is screaming, oh, he's, or the right is screaming, oh, he's crying citizenship, and the left is trying to discount him by pushing that notion, and that's not true.
Well, I think he's not using words like, you know, path to citizenship and things like that, mm-hmm. but, you know, if it helps him get a few supporters from the quote-unquote left, then I say, great, it'll help further break up, bust up that fake wall, the left-right paradigm. The Reagan-era Immigration Reform and Control Act, it did confer amnesty on, like you said, something like 3 million illegals, but remember, it was supposed to be done in exchange of promised stepped-up enforcement at the border and in the back office, but those sanctions never materialized.
Exactly, and that's what I'm getting at. That's what Rand Paul is saying. That's what Rand Paul is saying. He's saying, look, we go ahead, offer worker visas, bring these guys out of the shadows, let them get in line behind everybody else that's already applied for citizenship, which is the right thing to do. What happens with the amnesty program is the illegals go ahead and they get citizenship, they get this amnesty program, and all sins are forgiven, and they're put at the top of the line for doing nothing more than committing a criminal act. You don't reward people for criminal behavior. You know, and the point you just made with Reagan was very, very true, and that's what Rand Paul is saying, saying, look, if we're going to do this, if we're going to make an opportunity here where we can try to get these people to live a legal, law-abiding life on a work visa or whatever they are here in the United States, we're going to have to protect the border so we can keep more people from coming in that's going to get the same benefit out of the goodness of our heart. Because
yep,
that benefit is destroying us. When you've got 50% of Americans,
yep.
at least half of all Americans, you look at your neighbor, every other house is receiving government benefits in one form or another, whether that's food stamps, Section 8, you know, AFDC, whatever they call it now, Social Security Disability. I mean, you name it, entitlements are everywhere. That means one person is working for two people
in
every
business.
It's crazy.
That's how they keep pulling the strings on the marionettes, Ed, because if they do that, you're going to keep voting for the people who give you the money, and that's the great falling apart of the country, because if you keep promising them more and more things, well, you got to keep electing those people that promise you those things. And if somebody else wants to go on the stage and run against the incumbent candidate, we already know the incumbent has a huge advantage. So if you jump through all the hoops, you get through the corrupt backroom party partisan politics in the primary, and then you jump through all the hoops and you take on that other candidate in the general election, you've got to promise them something, too. We even saw that with the Republicans here in Louisville. That's how Ann Northup held up to her seat, as liberal as Louisville is. She promised all these handouts and giveaways to the West End.
And she delivered on him, too.
And she still got beat.
She delivered on him. I agree. She delivered on him. We're going to take a quick break, switch gears a little bit. We've got to do that. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. For you guys that are in the queue, if you want to talk on air, just hit that number one on your dial pad. We'll get you in as soon as we can. Call our numbers 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 for the rest of you guys. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
We are back, folks. I apologize. I'm sure you got a couple of seconds of dead air there. For some reason, the Muzak didn't kick in like it was supposed to, so I apologize. But we are back. I tell you what, you know, we've got other things going on in the world today besides Rand Paul and the crazy stuff. You know, here in Louisville, one story that caught my eye today I just thought was remarkable. We continue, you know, earlier we were talking about Occupy Wall Street. We were talking about all these different things, the Tea Party, et cetera. Even the guys in Louisville don't seem to get it. Our good GLI, Greater Louisville, Inc., brought in one of the best speakers I've ever heard in my life. If you like crooks, if you like thieves, if you like people who should belong in jail. And his name is Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. Apparently, Jamie Dimon came in and talked to GLI last night, was talking about how the nation's economic outlook is pretty good, all the large and medium corporations are doing fine, small businesses are starting to get more credit, blah, 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 blah.
Is this guy's under all kinds?
Yeah, I don't know. He probably got out
right
away.
On his private jet real quick?
I guarantee it. You know, but, I mean, here's a guy who is already under all kinds of investigation for J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase has already shelled out billions, in fines and everything else that the government gets, of course. The people who got hurt don't get a dime of it, apparently. And we're bringing him to Louisville to talk about what's going on with the economy and the outlook for business. Here's a guy who made mega bucks, you know, taking our bailout money, destroying the banks, taking our bailout money, and leading America down the road to where we're at today.
Well, he made his money hedging the bets. I mean, this is a guy who, going back 5 years ago right now, he was a board member on the Federal Reserve Bank, you know, same time as CEO of J.P. Morgan. He made decisions that had to connect $55 billion in loans to J.P. Morgan to bail out Bear Stearns. So think about this. He's on the Federal Reserve Bank, and he's CEO of J.P. Morgan, and he gets to stand over getting $55 billion in loans to J.P. Morgan.
That's fascinating. Go ahead, Mayo.
I was going to say, how can you sit on two boards that way?
Because
there's no conflict of interest there.
Well, I'll tell you about the conflict of interest. I'll tell you more about Mr. Jamie Dimon. I didn't know he was in Louisville, so Ed caught me off guard when he told me he was in Louisville, speaking before our illustrious Greater Louisville, Inc., but you know, Dimon is part of the global elite that Obama sucks up to. He is a Council on Foreign Relations member. He is a Trilateral Commission member, and he's at the very top, Class A, of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. He is one of the golden boys of Wall Street. So should it really surprise you that he has also been groomed to be a future Secretary of the Treasury?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And what's really alarming here, too, I mean, we had a Senate investigation that concluded Friday. I don't know if you guys caught this story or not. But, you know, J.P. Morgan was being investigated by the Senate, and, you know, over a $6.2 billion London whale trading scam, all right? It had to do with secret trades, creative bookkeeping, They were doing all kinds of voodoo magic, according to the Guardian, a UK paper, by the way. We don't get these stories here. But the Senate investigation concluded that Jamie Dimon knew about the sustained trading losses, and he lied to the investors and everybody else about these losses to keep J.P. Morgan's stock up. So this guy is out there actively involved in the scam to screw investors.
Yeah.
He's in a scam to screw
a bet taker. This guy took in $80 trillion, I started to say billion, $80 trillion with a TR, $80 trillion in bets that the American interest rates would never go up. If the American interest rates went up, Katie barred the door. So he took $80 trillion in bets that they wouldn't go up. So surprise, surprise, what happens?
Oh, there you go. There you go. Go ahead, Mayo.
Well, I just started to ask. I mean, the name sounds kind of familiar, but was also connected with the LIBOR scandal? I mean, J.P. Morgan.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
yes, he
very
was.
Much so.
Okay. That's why.
The same scandal where you had fathers of both the gunmen in supposed assault weapon attacks, which we know were only handguns and other small arms. The same LIBOR organization and scandal that had the fathers of both shooters testifying before Congress. That's just a coincidence, I'm sure.
Oh, it's always a coincidence. And that's the whole thing, because here we go. J.P. Morgan has to shell out billions of dollars in these fines we talked about, all under Jamie Dimon. And this guy is going around talking to people like GLI about how great the economy is and how fantastic the banks are doing. He's being groomed to be the next Secretary of the Treasury, as Dale pointed out. I mean, how stupid do they think we are?
Well, the only way I say that about him being Secretary of the Treasury, the only reason he wouldn't is because, in a way, he's already more powerful than Geithner. I mean, he controls Geithner. So it's almost like when you have a Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton, and you start talking about, oh, well, they run for UN Secretary General, because we already know that they're pulling strings behind the scenes. And you look at the stock market today, it's high, mm-hmm. not from profits, but the stock market keeps going up and up and up. And this is something maybe the audience knows, because we have a smart audience, and maybe they don't. The stock market is high, not because these companies are making money, but because of expanding sales revenues, not from profits from those revenues, but from labor cost savings, because they're cutting so many jobs.
Well, what makes it even more interesting, too, is because,
you don't
know,
have to pay that money out when you cut jobs, so that's the bottom line. I mean, I know Econ 101 says, well, businesses aren't in business to give people a job out here. Big blowhard on the 50,000 blowjob torch, WHAS, out here. I hear Rush Limbaugh talk about businesses aren't in business to give you a job. Yeah, but then don't prop up the numbers and say that the stock market is so great when they're not making it from revenue, they're making it from cutting jobs.
Well, and that's interesting, too, because I tell you another angle of this nobody wants to look at either is how many of these public pension funds, we continue talking about the pension crisis is right here in Kentucky and across everywhere, Louisville, the state of Kentucky, and literally every state has got some looming pension problems coming ahead of them. But, you know, J.P. Morgan Chase, I mean, even the New York City comptroller, John Liu, had admitted investing in J.P. Morgan shares as part of their public pension funds. As part of the public pension fund investment. So they invest in J.P. Morgan. And you know, this guy goes on record to say that J.P. Morgan Chase's chief has too much power, which is Jamie Dimon. You know, but what are they really going to do to this guy? Because right now, J.P. Morgan Chase, and I believe this to be just another ultimate lie, but right now, J.P. Morgan Chase is reporting record-breaking profits.
Yep.
They're reporting record-breaking profits. So how, you know, now are these really profits? Because wasn't that what they were doing when they were losing all this money and lying to their investors and lying to the American people and then screaming, we need money out of your tax money from our feds? I mean, come on. How can we really sit here and logically say that Jamie Dimon is a good guy? And why is this guy going around talking to cities and stuff and these people are taking them serious, like right here in Louisville at GLI?
Well, Alternet, anyone ever goes over to alternet.org, where it's not mainstream, it's Alternet News, and they did a great story literally just 2 days ago about Jamie, and it was called The Rise and Fall of Wall Street's Golden Boy, Jamie Dimon. And it talks about how even at the age of 9 years old, he would be pictured sitting there and just going over things like globalist control books and how to control the masses and how to control the economy. At 9 years old, they had this kid studying this stuff.
That's a good question. I'm really not sure how
that... I mean, it's not a question. It's just a fact. That's what he was doing. And this is a kid, he tried to make it in academia. He got rejected from Brown University. But then he got into Harvard Business School. So right after graduation, surprise, surprise, he got this big break where all of a sudden he was in with Citigroup.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up getting into Citigroup. It's kind of like a feudal lord. And he got this big sizable personal fortune in the process. And he even claimed that his business achievements was all for the good of society.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, too, because last month, you know, Diamond was speaking at a group, and he had a question asked from an economic analyst, Mike Mayo. And instead of answering the guy's question or anything, he just dismissed him totally and just looked at Mayo and said, I'm richer than you. You know, so this is what's really going on. I mean, this guy is strong-arming, doing everything he can to keep control of whatever he wants to do, and we have allowed him to do that.
Yep.
He's out there screaming now about, you know, all of these daggone things that are going on, trying to control the derivative trades and everything else, that this, you know, is the fault of government because they're regulating too hard and they're cracking down on Wall Street too much for risk-taking. Yet that's what cost us $1 trillion in bailout. We've got at least $200 trillion that isn't even recorded on the books. You know, go on and on and on and on if you want to. Okay, so, I mean, here we are, and GLI is inviting this guy to come here to Louisville, and they're not alone.
Well, they
they're
have
not
illusions
alone.
Of grandeur. People like Mr. Diamond have these illusions of grandeur, and we were just talking about the Occupy movement. You go back to last year, in the wake of Occupy Wall Street, Diamond, you know, was pretending to understand America's pain, and he tried to act like he had nothing to do with the bailouts and, and with the whole TARP thing. People were looking at Diamond, and publicly they were saying, well, you got bailed out, and you would have failed. And his exact response to them was, well, that's not true in my case because I wouldn't have failed.
Well, that's exactly it, you know. And this led the way for other people. I mean, if you look at Wells Fargo, you look at Citigroup, Bank of America, all these other people, you know, they all followed the lead of J.P. Morgan Chase. They all started doing the same thing. And all these people lost billions. How many millions of Americans lost their homes? You know, how many people lost their homes, lost their entire savings, lost their pension funds and everything else because of these idiots? I mean, Citigroup today even settled a class action lawsuit for $730 million. Actually, they settled it a couple of days ago. But they settled it for $730 million. A class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of the investors in Citigroup who said that the company lied to them in their disclosures, the same thing that J.P. Morgan Chase did. So, you know, we've got some serious issues here that have to be addressed. But Eric Holder just last week said what? That the banks are too big to prosecute.
That's
remember
like saying
that?
Well, we know organized crime's too big to prosecute. I started to say criminals are too big to prosecute. I mean, if we were going to prosecute the biggest criminals, we'd go right up to Capitol Hill. I mean, you look at Mr. Diamond, and this is why I said the rise and fall of Mr. Diamond, as Alternate was talking about, because you got to feel sorry for the guy. Last month, J.P. Morgan announced that they were docking Jamie Dimon's pay, that instead of $23 million a year, he was only going to make $11.5 million.
Yeah, you know.
You have to feel sorry for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, you know.
I was going to get mine $11.5 million a year.
I know. Did that cost him a jet? I don't know. You know, it's really interesting, though, that here we've got this stuff going on. We've got the banks sitting out here making all these daggone record profits again, which scared the hell out of everybody. You've got the Dow running record-breaking prices now. The Dow is continuing to go up. All I'm seeing is a repeat of what happened just a few years ago that took us to the brink of insolvency. We're repeating the same mistake for the quick buck. We didn't learn anything.
Nope.
And then you've got, of course, again, you know, you've got Eric Holder out there saying that, you know, the size of these institutions become so large that you can't prosecute them. If they bring a criminal charge, it'll have a negative effect on the economy, you know, on the national economy for sure, perhaps the world economy. So they become too large to prosecute. That is a scary thing because these bankers like Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan Chase now have it on record from the Attorney General. We can do whatever we want to do because we're too big to prosecute, which means we're too big to fail. So let's screw it all up again and we'll make them give us more money.
Well, look what's happening in Europe, and look what's happened even outside Europe. Go out to sea to Cyprus. Look what's happened in Cyprus. I mean, we had a TV appearance, I think it was yesterday or today, of Nigel Farage showed up on TV, and this is a guy who's been on the inside. He made his first TV appearance since the whole Cyprus wealth tax was announced. And this Englishman, he pulled no punches. He basically told the Europeans, get your money out while you can.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. You know, and then you look at Cyprus. They were actually trying to tax bank accounts. You know, the thing is, people follow America's lead around the world. We know this. You know, we've become the bully police around the world for no reason other than the fact we just want to control everything, I guess, or our powers that be do. I certainly don't. You know, but when you look at this, you look at what's going on in Cyprus, you look at what's going on with the euro, you look at all these different factors. All this starts and stops and stems from the American banking institutions. I mean, let's be real clear here. We're the richest nation in the world. And if we're out there screwing it up and lying to people like J.P. Morgan does, Citigroup has done, Wells Fargo has done, Bank of America has done, you've got the LIBOR, you're lying to investors now, you know, all these other factors coming into play, it's no wonder the world economy is in a shambles, is it?
Well, the only thing I'd argue with is I don't think we're the richest country in the world because our dollar's not backed by anything. I mean, like I said, you see it starting out in Europe, and when Nigel Farage goes over there, and this is the guy who head up the U.K. Independence Party for the last 3 years. He's also been a member of the European Parliament, and he's telling people in Europe to get out of those European banks, and this guy is a head member of the Independence Party and a member of Parliament. What does that tell you when he's telling them to get out?
Well, that's very true. And then, you know, there's the big picture here, too. Why are people so lackadaisical in the way that we approach all of this? There was another study. I'm going to switch gears just a little bit for you. But there was another study that was published 2 days ago. You can go to you know, I think it's the New York Times that posted it. It's the Pew Research Center. They just released what's called the State of the News Media 2013 report. And it should not really surprise anybody, the results here. But essentially what it boils down to is CNN and Fox News are probably the two best of the media sources. So there you go. You've got a liberal and a conservative because they're expected to get, they usually give their audiences about a 50-50 mix of news and commentary. So for every hour that you get a news, you're getting an hour of commentary. So, you know, they're still swaying things, but at least it's a 50-50 mix. MSNBC, or PMSNBC, I should say, for you, Dale, because that's your favorite term, 85% opinion, only 15% news. You think about Chris Matthews, Rachel Manchild, and all the other stuff. Is that a big surprise?
Well, I've talked about on my show before the Press Freedom Index, and this is a some people don't like the source, Reporters Without Borders, but they're not a partisan or nationalist group to any country, and they've talked about repeatedly who has the freest press. And again, I know there's so many people that are stuck in this jingoistic thing, America, we're the best in the world. Well, we're not. We're not the richest country. We're not the freest country. And we're sure to hell not the freest country when it comes to media freedom. I don't know what the numbers were that came out this year, but just about this time last year, they put out the results on that. And in media freedoms, I talked about this several months back, we ranked 47th in the world when it came to free press. That means 46 countries judged to be freer than our press.
Isn't that amazing? We all scream about the First Amendment. We all scream about, you know, equality. Oh, I agree. You know, that's why we have, thank God, we have avenues available to us, like the one we're using right now for our show every night. You know, but that, you know, thank God we've got some avenues available. But the mainstream press, and that's the biggest thing, because we cannot compete. You know, small shows like us cannot compete with the mainstream media. There's just no way with the millions and millions of dollars, or billions of dollars, if you will, that they pour into this. When you've got 90% of your commentary, of your news channel that says, you know, your first source for news, like they do at PMSNBC, 90% is all opinion or commentary, especially during prime time when most people watch, then, you know, you're going to have one hell of an influence that your independent-minded people or your nonpartisan people just can't compete with. And that's why it's such a slow process. But I thought that was an interesting study. I will give you guys a link to the story in the chat room right now as we speak.
I was just going to say the problem with that is they have to put out so much stuff to cover the 24-hour-a-day news cycle now. You know, there was a time, and it wasn't better. I don't want to have people say in the good old days, but there was a time people, God forbid, actually watched people like, you know, Dan Blather and Peter Lemmings and Tom Brokenjaw, and they'd watch those guys at 6:30 every night, and that was their news. And they didn't even realize they were getting commentary then, but it was quality. They thought over quantity. It was only about a half an hour for them to digest, and everybody watched it at the same time. But now these news channels, regardless of whether they're quote-unquote left or quote-unquote right, they're really all just globalist-controlled, and they all have to fill a news cycle that goes round and round and round. It never stops. I mean,
I blame Ted Turner.
What's that?
I blame Ted Turner.
You blame Ted Turner for starting CNN?
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's ultimately what it boils down to. Nobody wants to remember, but CNN lost a ton of money when they first started. They were losing money hand over fist, but they became the first 24-hour. Right, exactly. They became the first 24-hour news cycle, and what ultimately happened was that that's what put Wolf Blitzer on the map, if you remember. He got stuck in the bombing over in Iraq during the Gulf War. And, you know, that's when CNN hit the mainstream. That's when CNN finally started making money. People started going to them for the 24-hour coverage, so everybody else had to catch up. So now you've got every mainstream media with this 24-hour coverage. So they're trying to portray this 24-hour coverage like you're talking about, and all they're basically doing is recycling the same story through all the networks with 2 hours worth of commentary for a 5-minute story.
Well, I tell people if you want to get free media, and I mean free as in it's not controlled and it's not enslaved by the globalists, you better learn to speak German or French or Dutch because the freest media and the Press Freedom Index keeps telling us are in Western Europe, Finland, Norway, Austria, Iceland, Switzerland, those are still the countries that are always at the top with the freest media, and they also have the best economy, surprise, surprise.
Well, you're absolutely right. Well, they really, really do. Go ahead, Mayo.
Mayo?
Well, I mean, interject what y'all was, you know, the talking in the bank and that, and, I mean, what chaps my chaps is, if they would have left, has anybody been following Iceland?
Oh, yeah, that's I'm talking about Iceland, sure. Man. They told the bankers.
You know, I mean, Yeah, well, I mean, they, instead of doing like the banks, bailing them out, one man caused all that, you know, trying to hedge the bets or playing hedge funds or whatever, and the whole country basically had to go bankrupt. I don't know how many millions lost their pensions, but instead of a government thing, they let capitalism work. And if you look now, in just 3 years, they are already up like 35-40% of where they were only 3 years ago. The country and the people had the common sense. They knew, we can't charge $10 for this because of the economy, so it's $7.
Yeah,
they the same.
They started that thing over there. It's basically like a new American Revolution because what happened just 2 months ago, two of the most senior bankers in Iceland were put in prison for making bad loans. They put the bankers in prison. Imagine that.
Yeah, they played Jamie Dimon's game, got caught. They went to jail for it. Which is exactly what we need to be doing here, and we won't do it. Now, there were growing pains. Let's not forget this. There were growing pains, but the reality was foreclosures, home foreclosures, gone. Since these were all joke loans and everything else, they gave people an opportunity to start fresh. They didn't resolve them. They didn't absolve them of their debt for their properties.
But they stopped
the foreclosure processes. Right. They got rid of all these BS fees and everything else they kept tacking onto it. Said, look, you borrow $50,000 for this home at 5%, start making your payments today, $50,000 at 5% for the term of the loan. And you know, they gave these people the opportunity.
Right.
And they've taken advantage of it.
They were patient. They knew that over in our country here, nobody's patient here for anything. And you look back, just look at when the Soviet Union broke up, some of those former Soviet bloc satellite countries.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to capitalism, and the truth is some of the former Soviet bloc countries are more capitalist, not crony capitalism, not fake controlled capitalism, but free capitalism. Some of those countries are now more capitalist than we are, but they had to go through the growing pains, like Ed said, and many people in those few years right after they got away from communism, I'm sure there were a lot of old Bolsheviks that thought, see, we need to go back to communism. We're still not getting fed, and we're still – but they had to go through the growing pains. This has been going on for Iceland for 5 years, the whole thing of the bankers. So now they're putting bankers in prison, and that is what we should have been doing here.
And well, we still can. We just don't have any political will to do so because the bankers finance every politician, and the only thing they care about is the free private corporate jet that they get to borrow from their buddy to go off to the Philippines and have sex with a hooker, you know. So that's just the way it is. But yeah, that's the
interesting.
That's a different story, man. You know, you got to get them to get their respect. It's what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I won't tell on you, but I get to do it too. But it really is interesting, though, and that's the one thing that I'm looking at you, Dale. The American people are not patient. The reality is, you know, the people in Iceland, because they are patient, it's a lot easier to be patient when you're not being forced out onto the street because of an illegal bank transaction. It's a lot easier to be patient when you're given a path to getting back on your feet where you get to keep your home and try to find a job to put food on the table. It's a lot easier to be patient when you're not facing homelessness, being hungry, and all the other things. And that's what the people in Iceland had. They were given opportunity. They weren't given handouts. There's a difference. They were given opportunity. But that's what a sense of nationalism does for you. We don't have nationalism in this country. We have individualism. And that's the biggest problem. Mayo, thanks for the call, man. We are out of time. Dale, final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts is, can we benefit from looking at what Iceland did? Can we fix what's wrong with banking? The source of the crisis and the debt is twofold. There's one, fractional reserve lending, and number two, there's federal banking. And we've had decades and decades of where we keep going along, and Japan was once the world's largest creditor, and now they have a debt-to-GDP ratio that's 250%. It took three decades of foolish spending for Japan to realize it, and Japan now believes it failed because it did not try hard enough. Central banks blow bubbles of amplitude over time. Every step of the way, they bail out banks, they bail out banks, they bail out banks, and they screw us over. So we can fix the problem, but you have to look at who benefits from inflation. The banks, the wealthy, and the politicians benefit from inflation. So if you're going to fix what's wrong with the banking before there's a global currency crisis, you got to bet against that ideal. You got to hold real gold, real silver, real monetary means as your use of measurement and take control of the system and tell them death to the New World Order.
There's a lot of truth in that. You know, I'm looking through the chat room as we go through like I do every show, and our good friend Paul over Stop It is telling us, you know, he's got a statement in there that this is the balkanization of the USA. You know, you've got to look realistically, because the best way to win anything, if you're at war, make no mistake, our leaders are at war with we the people. They really are. And you don't have to look any further than look at your neighborhood. Look at your own neighborhood. Look at the quality of life in your own neighborhood over the last 20 years and see if you can see a substantial difference. You know, we are being divided culturally. We're being divided linguistically. When you start looking at English as a second language in the United States of America, you know, we have language barriers. We're being told that it's okay to be, you know, a rapist today. Rapists are getting away with things. It's okay to go ahead and have racial divides because we don't report the black on white crime, but we got to report the white on black crime, which creates that divide. All of these different things. We are being pushed down a road to where none of us can agree on anything, and that's great for the powers to be. That's great for the powers to be. Unfortunately, it's not good for America. It's not good for Americans. When you look at the issues in Iceland, as I talked a minute ago, these people were willing to sacrifice for the long-term gain. They knew what it was. They got to keep their daggone. They got to keep their jobs. They got to keep their houses. The bankers paid the price for trying to screw the people. We have to get that will here. But those in Washington today don't have that will. Those right here in Louisville, Kentucky don't have that will. They're not going to have that will until we hold them accountable. You know, I was in an interesting discussion today. We were talking about economics and politics. And, you know, I had one guy in this discussion say, well, I'm here to talk about economics. I don't care about the politics. But what you folks have to understand is politics are economics. They walk hand in hand. Every economic situation you find in is a result of something political. There's no other way around it. If you want to build a business, you have to go to the government to get permission. You have to get licenses. You have to get permits. You have to grease this guy. You got to grease that guy. Yes, that's the way you get business going. If you want to stay in business, you've got to pay taxes. You've got to hire employees, which gives you more stuff to worry about. All the while, the banks are saying, here's the money. You know, we're going to take a certain percent off top. We're going to call it a fee, so we're going to put that in our pocket as our bonus every year. You're going to pay this back at this percent of interest, but we're going to mess with you for the next 30 years while you're doing it because we want more and more and more and more. The banks are getting rich. The politicians are getting richer. Look at Barack Obama. What was his net worth when he entered office? What has he done other than be president for the last 5 years? And his net worth went from somewhere a little over $1 million to over $10 million today. He hasn't made that much money. He's made less than $2 million as president so far. You've got to open your eyes, folks. You've got to get involved. If you want to make the difference, you have to be the difference. And that means you've got to quit being scared and start holding your elected leaders accountable. That's it for tonight. Dale, I know you won't be here tonight.
I will see you next week. Make sure you tell everybody what juicy things you'll talk about tomorrow night. Y'all don't forget to listen to Ed, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Dale, unfortunately, folks, has decided he's got to go out of town. I hate it when these guys have these business things where they do that kind of stuff. Drives me
nuts. I know. It's horrible.
You know, unfortunately, with my business, which is what you guys see every day with LouisvillePolitics.com and this radio show, I can take a laptop and go anywhere. So if I'm in Hawaii, I can do my job. So it's okay. In the meantime, have a great night, folks. We'll be back here tomorrow night. You'll be listening to TNT Thursday Night Truth with Ed Springsteen. Have a great night. We'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.